This is Worldviews. I'm Rebecca Cruz, the Assistant Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Alisa Ganeva is an author from the Russian Republic of Dagestan. She won the debut literary prize for young Russian language writers in 2009 using a male pseudonym. She's also the author of The Mountain and the Wall and The Bride and the Bridegroom. All of her novels are based in Dagestan. Alisa Ganeva, welcome to Worldviews.
Hello.
So you are a poet and a writer, and you are from a part of the world that perhaps people here in the United States don't know all that much about. So I thought perhaps we could start with you telling us a little bit about Dagestan, which is in the Caucasus region near Russia, depending on how you categorize things. But could you tell us a little bit about your home country?
Yes, thank you. Dagestan, the name of this tiny republic on the very southern tip of Russia can be translated as the country of mountains, because it's really in this mountainous region of Caucasus. And it became a part of Russia in the middle of the 19th century, rather long ago. But since that, it's still remaining a hotspot of the country. It's Muslim populated. Lots of ethnic minorities live there, each speaking its own language. For example, I do belong to one of these minorities called Avar people. It's the major ethnicity in Dagestan. So my mother tongue is Avarian language. But I grew up in Russian culture, and I started writing in Russian, and I write in Russian language. But I use this peculiar pidgin Russian spoken in my native region when people just mix words and expressions and use some syntaxes or some grammar or some phraseology from their own local languages. And I came to Moscow to study in the Literary Institute after my high school when I was 17. And I was really surprised when I encountered people who didn't know that I'm from Russia as well, because the country is so big and it's populated by such a diverse population that people living in the capital, in Moscow, and all life in Russia is centralized. All the cultural events, all the major things are happening just in two cities of Moscow or St. Petersburg. And that is why people who grow up in Moscow, they have somewhat snobberish relationship with the rest of Russia. And sometimes they do not realize the boundaries of their own country. So they kept asking me, what currency do you have?
Oh, no.
Where did you learn to speak Russian? And so on. And so I started writing about this region, which is so unknown and also full of stereotypes, because during the 90s, there was a war for independence going on in the neighboring republic called Chechnya. Maybe you heard something about that. And then during last 15 or 20 years, we're having the rise of Islamic fundamentalism, something which is happening in different parts of the world nowadays. So it's the same thing in my native region, when different branches of Islam fight together, when the more traditional Sufi and philosophical branch is coming into conflict with the more fundamentalist so-called Salafi movement of Islam. And it also goes along with the dissatisfaction of especially young people with the system they're living in, with the police lawlessness, with corruption. And so they're trying to find some stable structure where the law is actually working. And when missionaries from the Middle East come and convert them into this fundamentalist version of Islam, they make these young people to believe that the Sharia independent state would be a solution and would be this paradise on earth. So in my first novel, which has been translated into English, which came out 2 years ago under the title of The Mountain and the Wall, I'm trying to show what can happen if this region is separated from Russia by the wall. So the topic of walls, of separation, is really becoming of a current interest.
Absolutely.
In USA as well.
Yes.
And so I was really excited when it was translated by Carol Apollonia, who is a Duke University professor, and it came out in a little publishing house in Texas. So my next novel is coming out in 2 months, and it is called Bride and Groom, and it is dedicated to the matrimonial institution in this closed society. And
how is that different than we might think of matrimony elsewhere? Is there something unique to it, unique to your culture and marriage?
Yes, it's a hodgepodge of different traditions, when archaic attitude towards marriage, when marriage is not about couple decisions of two people, but something that the whole society and the whole community decide. And it's all about collective matchmaking, when parents make a list of potential brides and show it to their son, and the son has to pick up. And so the plot, my story, my novel begins with the family, the parents booking a big banquet hall, like 3 or 4 months ahead, and they spend lots of money for it. So the hall is booked, but the bride is not yet chosen. So we have a date of the wedding, but my main character has to find his bride. And it may seem too melodramatic, too fantastical and unreal, but in fact that's the way our things happen there. At the same time, the globalization is working, and everybody is on social networks and online, and so
that plays a role in this matchmaking as well, social media.
Yes, it's really so the traditional society is erased by these new tendencies and trends, but at the same time, their authentic culture is dissolved, and people living in these regions, they do not really understand who they are now, and they are something that they think to be their own tradition and their own history is in fact something enforced on them. For example, many traditions that people of my age are enjoying, wearing hijabs, for example, and so on, is not something authentical or very traditional for this region, because Islam was a very superficial thing for the region. And for example, some of grandmothers and grannies and older women, they are smelling tobacco, they are wearing tattoos, and they are very used to the role of the head of a family. So it doesn't resemble anything what we think about a Muslim woman or a woman from Saudi Arabia, for example. So it's all about fashion, and it's all about abrasion of the true historical memory and substituting real forefathers by some artificial forefathers. And it's a big problem which I'm trying to tackle in the form of fiction. So I just tell stories. I tell how people meet, how they fight, how they wed, how they die, and how they argue. And I love dialogue, dialogue.
I find it fascinating that you say that the people in Russia, in Moscow in particular, didn't understand that you too were Russian, and that there were issues there, and they had stereotypes about Dagestan. What are, I don't know, the top three things that you would want our listeners to understand about your country? What stereotypes can we get away from?
There is this perception that Caucasus, and especially Muslim-populated region, that it's very conservative and maybe aggressive to everything that doesn't fit the frame. But in fact, if you trace the history back, you can see that the region are really hosted, maybe primitive, but still very democratic institutions. For example, my grand-grandparents further on, my ancestors lived in so-called free alliances, where the head of the alliance or the union of villages was elected each 4 years when there was a union of villagers or towners. So they collected together, they made decisions. And also, talking about the women's place in the society, the land, which was the most precious and valuable thing in mountains, where there is just few of land which is suitable for agriculture, it was inherited only by daughters. So it was passed from mother to daughter. And our sons got houses and buildings, and our daughters got the land, which was the main property. And also, it's a region of craftsmen, which still survive through centuries. There are villages of silversmiths and pottery makers and carpet makers, which do not use any chemical materials or anything very modern, and do stick to and adhere to very ancient and old craft traditions, which is quite a unique place. And also so many nationalities and languages on a little spot spot of land. It's also quite unusual.
Very multicultural, and the image of the mountains, and it sounds lovely. You mentioned gender, and one thing I think is interesting is you did have a published work that you published under a pseudonym, a male pseudonym, and from what I understand, you received an award for this piece, and it wasn't until you went up to accept the award that those that were granting it realized that you were in fact a woman. That must have been fun, being able to kind of say the joke is on you. But what was your motivation in doing this, and why did you decide to see it through until the ceremony?
That was the very, very beginning of my creative career. Mm-hmm. So it was my first long story I've ever written. And when I finished it, I realized that it's a very masculine world. And while writing it, I really felt as if I'm somebody else, and as if I'm some young man from the same region. And also when I decided to submit this piece of fiction for a very vibrant competition, or for young writers under 25 years. It's a competition for which around 70,000 manuscripts are applied every year. So it's very competitive. And I was already being published as a critic, so I didn't want to be recognized, and I wanted to get a very clear and neutral assessment. So I got this pseudonym. I submitted my manuscript. I went through this vetting process, and then there was a long list, and then short list, and then people started talking about this boy and the manuscript and trying to find him. And then I had to register a fake email and messenger and to give interviews. And then they asked me to send a picture, a portrait of a boy, and that was another challenge. I was looking for a picture. And finally, five finalists remained. And during the awarding ceremony, when I had to step up the stage and receive the award, everybody knew that it was me. But it was a fine experiment, not just a literary hoax, because it also raised the discussion about the problem of gender in literature.
Absolutely.
Is there such a thing as a feminine prose or masculine prose, and how can you tell apart one from another? And I remember one of the jury members who started, once he knew who was the real author, he started to reread my long story in order to find the traces of the woman's pen, of the woman's word and voice. And I found one episode when I'm describing a wedding in Dagestan, and the dancers, the guests on the wedding, they are passing a special stick for dancers, adorned, embellished stick covered in material. In a textile, in a special textile. So I put a name of this textile, and I said no man would mention the name of this. So these petty details is something that women do.
Oh, how interesting, and absolutely an interesting experience and experiment to see how people reacted, and how fascinating that he went back and reviewed it for that. Well, it sounds like you're doing just a wonderful work portraying your country, your people, and hopefully we can learn more and more about that from you. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to my conversation with Elisa Ganeva. She's an award-winning author from the Russian Republic of Dagestan. Worldviews is produced in partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Katie Holland prepares our research, Jacob McClellan edited this interview, and Sam Dupre produced this show. For Gershon Leventhal and Samer Shahata, I'm Rebecca Cruz.